Thank you. So I'm going to try and not sound like your great aunt, but Grace Church, you have grown. It is so great to see so many new faces. And I'm not going to have a chance to chat to everyone. So to help us get to know each other, I'd like us to do a quick icebreaker. So what I'd like you to do is turn to the person next to you or the person next to them, if you spend too much time talking to the person next to you, and tell them a fun fact about yourself. Oh yeah, I hear the groans. Are we all good with the concept of a fun fact? This is not your life story. This is something interesting and unexpected about you. People are already going, so go. Okay, I'm going to need to stop you there. Sorry. I always struggle with this bit. Grace Church, can I have your attention? Thank you. So, to help me get to know you, who has an interesting fun fact that their neighbour told them? I can take maybe three. Voluntary, who got a good fun fact? You talk for a lot, you must have. Hello, over here, what's your fun fact? He likes to play music. What music do you play? Gospel, yes, gospel. Anyone else, fun fact from their neighbor? Hello? What fun fact have we got here? Yes, not summer till she hears an ice cream. I like that. One more fun fact. Anyone find something interesting about their neighbours? Oh, Andrew, what have we got? Do you want the mic?
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'll keep the mic.
Geraldine is a master baker. Oh,
Geraldine. Everyone make friends with Geraldine. Nice.
She didn't use the word master.
Okay, okay. What's your speciality, Geraldine? Sorry? Oh, it's your profession, of course, okay.
She's a nurse.
I'm so sorry, you're a nurse and a master baker. What a combination. Okay, I'm gonna stop asking people because clearly my hearing is not great. So yeah, I know some people hate fun facts, so sorry about that. But the reason that fun facts are on my mind is that next week I'm going to a work team building retreat. Don't. I don't really know what's going to happen, but there is going to be improv karaoke, and they've already asked me to submit a fun fact, so that's going to pop up at some point as a game. And my fun fact took me ages. I took way longer than I gave you to think about what my fun fact would be. But my fun fact is that I was once in an advert that was deemed so likely to upset, distress or offend audiences that it was banned from all British cinema. Yeah. Yeah. Me, offensive. Can you imagine that? I'm going to be honest, that fun fact sounds really cool when I tell it like that. And if I tell you the full story, it's a bit lamer than that. So it was, I think, Christmas 2015, and the new Star Wars film was coming out. Does anyone know which one that was? Anyone know which one?
Episode 7?
Yeah, we'll go with Episode 7, Star Wars, was coming out. And they'd filmed this advert, they'd prepared it, they'd edited it, and it was going to go out before Star Wars. And then a few days before this happened, the distributors pulled the film. They thought, this is too offensive, we'll just get in too much trouble if we show that. And this offensive advert, it wasn't drugs, language, nudity, or violence. It was a bunch of Christians saying the Lord's Prayer. I think I've got a photo of the big... Why do I point theirs? No? If anyone can help me out with bringing up that photo. But it made headlines. Does anyone remember this? The Lord's Prayer being banned from cinemas? I'm getting a few nods. It was like BBC News, headlines all over. There were lawsuits. There ended up in this really strange situation where Richard Dawkins publicly backed the Church of England, which is clearly a sign of the end times, I know. Now, I don't want to dwell on whether the decision that the cinema made was wrong or right, because I imagine in the room we've got a lot of different opinions about free speech and business and how these things relate, and that's good that we've got diversity on that. But I do want to pick up... Oh, my picture's come up. Yeah, we made the BBC News.
Doesn't look anything like you, sir.
I had short hair back in the day. So we're not going to go on about whether this decision was wrong or right, but I do want to pick up on one argument that came up in all the comment sections. You know, all these articles and the comment sections just exploded with people talking about this. And they were pretty predictable. About a third of the comments said almost exactly the same thing. Someone would say, I don't get what the fuss is about. The Lord's Prayer is harmless. I'm atheist, agnostic, spiritual but not religious, Buddhist, Jewish, Muslim, and the Lord's Prayer doesn't offend me. Now, let's be charitable. What these people are saying, they're trying to be kind, they're trying to be accepting of other people's religion, they're trying to recognize that we live in a society with lots of different religions. But I think they're wrong. I think that the Lord's Prayer is flipping offensive. And I think if you're not hearing the offense in the Lord's Prayer, it's because you've said it so many times, maybe at primary school, every day, that you're not hearing what's offensive about it. Or maybe we're not understanding what the words actually mean. So, this morning, I want to make the Lord's Prayer offensive again. And let's just have a quick skim through. I'm not looking at the whole prayer today, but just have a quick skim through the prayer and look at the offense in this. So, first two words, Our Father. Two words in, and you've stumbled on a word that is very problematic in our culture. And I should just say, as a disclaimer, I'm going to keep saying our culture. Obviously, we don't all experience culture the same. Because of who we are, we might experience our culture differently. Some of us might have grown up in different cultures and wouldn't consider this our culture. But it's just easier for me to keep saying our culture, otherwise this preach would be twice as long. And I'm just trying to talk about our culture generally, what life is like in the UK in 2023. But, you know, I see that everyone has different experiences of that. So that's my disclaimer. Our Father. So fathers in our culture, I think the Archbishop of York made headlines a few weeks ago for saying that the word father is problematic. And there's very valid reasons why it is. A lot of our earthly fathers have not been great. None of them have lived up to the example that God sets. So that word is challenging. But also culturally, where in the past we maybe had more respect for fathers, now we don't. If you have a comedy with a family in, the father's usually the butt of the joke. He's the Homer Simpson, he's not very smart, he doesn't know what's going on, everyone else is running rings around him. So that's quite an offensive thing to say about God. And you're also saying that all of us are one family. We are all children. That's pretty challenging. Next up we pray that your kingdom would come on earth. Now, if you can't hear how offensive and challenging that is, imagine if another religious group were saying that. Imagine if the atheists were saying, let us build an atheist kingdom on earth. It's pretty challenging. Then, this one's a real kicker for those of us who live under capitalism, like any of us don't. Kicker for capitalism. Give us our daily bread. So give us, we're not individuals, our daily bread, the food we need for today, and not more than that, and our daily bread without any reference to work or money. Offensive. Now, this one's really bad. We are all sinners. I mean, if you haven't got plans for the afternoon, you fancy starting a fight, go out into Truro and tell people they're sinners. People in our culture do not like hearing that. I don't endorse that comment. Then forgive people who sin against you. We have a culture where someone could get a photo of you from 30 years ago doing something stupid and you're cancelled forever. That's it. You are written off. So to forgive people who sin against us, that is an offensive challenge. And all of these things, they are good and true, but they are challenging to our culture. And I think Jesus meant for the Lord's Prayer to be offensive. He meant many other things, but I think he meant it to be offensive. When the disciples said to Jesus, "Lord, teach us how to pray," I think he looked at them and he knew that in a few years he'd be gone, that they'd be scattered across the Roman Empire trying to live in different cultures. And they were going to try and live in his followers in this culture that was going to try and change them. And then I think Jesus, because he's Jesus, looked into the future and saw all of us, Christians in every time and place around the world, and knew that we would be living in different cultures trying to be his followers. And I think he gave us this tool of the Lord's Prayer, this regular prayer that we say, which is going to help us to question our culture. And it's not like this is going to make us see that our culture is all bad. It's going to help us to accept the really good and beautiful things, the art, the comedy, the food, whatever is good, but also to be challenged so that we don't drift too far in the way our culture wants to pull us. So it's kind of like my sister moved to Canada 2 years ago, Vancouver, and she doesn't think she's changed at all. But I was on the phone to her last week, and she was talking about vacation and diapers and pants, but she didn't mean pants, she meant pants. And she didn't think she's changed at all, but I can just see that difference. And it's like stupid examples with the words, but also she seems to care less about money and she seems to enjoy being outside more. And she's not done anything to change like that. She's just living around Canadians who value those things. Are there any Canadians here? Woo! Yes. I'm not going to make the next joke I was going to make. I'm actually going to slightly reword this next bit. My sister was aware that this was going to happen when she moved to Canada. And she is, my sister's amazingly funny. She used to do stand-up when she was in London. And she was worried that when she moved to Canada, she would lose her British sense of humour and adopt a more Canadian one, which would you say is quite different? Yes, okay. And she was really worried that she'd lose that because she really values her British sense of humour. So while she's been out there, she's been listening weekly to British comedy podcasts. And it's just that reminder that even though the culture she's in has different values for comedy, she wants like the mean, witty British comedy. And when she listens to these podcasts, they remind her of her own values. And I think the Lord's Prayer is kind of like that. Whatever culture we're living in, we say this prayer again and we're reminded that we are called to live slightly differently. And it's called to challenge our culture. So this morning, I can't look at the whole Lord's Prayer and why that's offensive. I've been given the line of "Hallowed be your name." And I think this might actually be one of the more challenging, offensive ones in there. But we kind of let it slide because no one really knows what it means. You know, the word "hallowed" is just quite tricky. But that's what we're going to look at this morning. And I'm going to look at three ways in which the line "Hallowed be your name" and praying that regularly is going to challenge the stories that our culture tells us. But first, what does "Hallowed be your name" mean? I mean, Talon did such a great job on the worship songs that I almost feel like I don't need to talk too much about it. It was all of those things that we were singing about. That God's name, being hallowed, is that God's name is made holy, that he is set apart, that his name is sanctified and consecrated. It's that this holiness would be revealed. And a thing that gets lost in translation sometimes, that saying to God, "Hallowed be your name," is not just acknowledging that his name is holy, but it's a petition, like the other lines of the Lord's Prayer. When we say, your kingdom come, it's a request that God would make his name holy. So that's where we're at with Hallowed Be Your Name. Now we're going to have a look at these three stories that our culture tells us and how I think that Hallowed Be Your Name challenges it. So firstly, and hopefully my slides work. Do I need to point it at you? So our culture tells us that God's name is... Oh, am I doing it wrong? Huh? I'm messing up the tech. Last time I deleted my notes, so it's better than that. Our culture tells us that God's name is not holy. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with me when I say that. We know on the surface level that God's name is used in a way that's not holy, right? You know, you hear people saying, oh God, Jesus Christ, it's just a really flippant expression, and his name is used to mean at best nothing, at worst something pretty bad. And a lot of Christians get really worked up about that, and I understand that, but personally, I see that more as the symptoms of a bigger problem, a culture that doesn't understand that God's name is holy. Because the holiness of God's name is not so much about the holiness of that word, but about the holiness of God's reputation, his character, his authority. And this is a point where I could get really into like Jewish culture and try and show off my theology degree, but to be honest, names work like this in English. We use people's names as shortcuts for their reputation and authority. So if I told you before I preached that Andrew Sampson has read all of my notes, he agrees with everything I said, and then I went on to preach some crazy heresies, that would damage Andrew's reputation, the reputation of his name. And names also show us something about our relationship to people. So, I mean, I hate to break it to you, but you've already been lied to this morning. The man leading the service told you his name was John. And I would never call him John because we went to uni together and I knew John when he was a student. So I would only ever call him JP because that was his name before he grew up. And that name that I have for him shows a relationship and a time and a place when we knew each other. And it's the same with God's name. His name is his reputation. It's our relationship to him. And that is not holy in our culture. There are people in our community, our friends, our families, who don't know John. No, don't know John. Oh, don't know God. And his name, his character, when you say God's name in our culture, is not connected with the things that we know to be true, like his love and his justice and his mercy. So even though his name, the name, is not holy, also his name is not holy in our culture. And that's what our culture says is right. So we pray, hallowed be your name. And we are reminded that when our culture says God's name is not holy, the Lord's Prayer says that God's name is holy and he is making it holy. And this is really great news for two reasons. Firstly, we can trust that God's name is holy. Even when we hear things about his character that are not true, that say he's not holy, that he's not good, we know that he is, because we read that in the Bible. We know, we say that in this prayer. And it's not just a personal thing for us that we can know that God is holy, but it's a thing for all of us. You know, the world will tell us that maybe it's okay for me to think that God's holy, but it's okay for my friend to think that their God's holy, and for another friend to treat happiness as holy, or money as holy, or family as holy. And one person might even treat their own identity as holy. But we are told that there is something objectively different about God, that his holiness is certain, and that it's not a choice of what we treat as holy. The only choice is that whether we recognize that God's name is holy or not. Secondly, that God's name is holy and he is making it holy is really good news, because it reminds us that God is the one who makes his name holy, not us. And that last bit is so, so important. If God's reputation was staked on us going out into the world, living flawlessly, living lives that represent God's character perfectly, evangelizing so well, caring for the poor wonderfully. Well, I mean, God's reputation would be in trouble. At least among the other road users of Falmouth. Now, I think there's a very small group of people in the church, not this church, that need to wake up to how they carry God's name. You know, God's reputation in the world has been so damaged by sex abuse, scandal, crisis, cover-up, lying, people stealing, people doing all these things, claiming they're doing it in the name of God. But, you know, I'm going to assume that the majority of us aren't like that. We are trying. We're failing often, but we are trying. And I think this morning God wants to remind us that he is the one who makes his name holy. The burden of his reputation is not on us, and thank God for that. When I was a teenager, I felt so much pressure to represent God well in my school, because I thought I might be the only Christian my friends would ever meet. And, you know, that the eternal destiny of whoever sat next to me in double French was entirely on me. And if I wasn't able to communicate the love of Jesus through nodding sympathetically to their stories, offering them a sharpener at just the right time, if I didn't slide my faith into every conversation, if I wasn't cool and fun so that they knew that Jesus was cool and fun, all before the bell went for the next lesson, well, my classmate was probably going straight to hell, and it was all my fault. And like, that's being a teenager and thinking that the world revolves around you. But how many of us still spend our days worrying that we are going to do something that damages the reputation of God? And then if we do, beating ourselves up for it after. And I think this line of the Lord's Prayer is a regular reminder to take the pressure off. Because God's name is holy because he is holy, not because we are. And you know, the funny thing about all that stress I was under as a teenager is that the girl who used to sit next to me in maths, when we went off to uni, she found a great church and joined it. And actually, my parents have just moved church. And when they got there, they met a man who'd just been a Christian a few years and were talking to him about his story and realized we knew each other because he'd been in my photography class. God saved my friends because that's what God does. He didn't need me to manage his reputation and impress them. He's impressive enough. And this line from the Lord's Prayer reminds us that God's reputation is in safe hands. His. So I'm from a house church. I'm not used to speaking for this long. So I want to break it up a little bit and get you to reflect on this. I'd like you to think about what you'll be doing tomorrow, whether you'll be back at work, with your kids, doing something else fun. And think about how that day might be different if you were 100% certain that God was making his name holy. How you might think and act differently. So that's just reflect on your own for a few minutes, and then I'll stop you.